What is up, everybody? How we doing? Episode 277 of Living Off the Land coming at you. Recording on a Wednesday night here at the Palatial LOTL Studios. If you would like to sponsor those studios, you can follow us on social media. But I am Dan here as Champ is acting as security guard. He's watching the door of the studio. I'm Dan here with Steven. Steven, it's Wednesday night.
So who should we have guest sponsor? Should it be like Kibbles and Bits, or should it be Invisible Fence? Or I'll just have Champ walk out to one of the options, I guess. Just hit us up, guys.
Yeah.
No, seriously. But it's Wednesday night. You know what that means. It's LOTL. It's episode 277. And since we're starting with B-Can tonight, since there's no beer of the week, probably should have picked something along I-277 in the Akron area, but... I'm not going with the state route numbers theme like I was for a while. We're staying within Cleveland right now. So we're going to start. We're going to go back to the east side tonight. So last week we did Ohio City, which I had described as a number one seed neighborhood, basically, if we're talking about in NCAA tournament terms. This time we're going with a neighborhood that would arguably be a 15 or a 16 seed. That would be one that would be an extreme underdog on paper. But this is a neighborhood that if we were going neighborhoods against one another, this is one that could have some upset potential. So I am talking about the Kinsman neighborhood.
You could show me a map and I would never, ever be able to tell you where that is.
It's a little bit off the beaten path for most. So Kinsman is on the southeast side of town. It is actually directly south of the Fairfax neighborhood, which we talked about a few weeks ago. Kinsman is, if you look at it on the map, it actually looks a little bit like the African continent. The north side of it is larger and juts out kind of to the left, and then it gets a little more skinny as you get toward the bottom. The east side is, the east edge of the neighborhood is bounded by East 93rd Street and Woodhill Road. The north side primarily by Woodland Avenue. The south side by Union Avenue. And then the west side, as I say, kind of, is a little bit jagged, but you know, runs along a couple of different corridors. Some of it east 79th Street, some of it the south end of the Garden Valley projects, and then later on the Red Line and the Green Line, which also go through that neighborhood. So the first thing I want to point out here is that this neighborhood is historically has been one of the more underprivileged, one of the more impoverished neighborhoods of the city, even when, you know, some of the neighborhoods on the northeast side, which are not so great now, but were back when the days where you had, you know, the real industrial titans of the time, you know, your John D. Rockefellers and the like, and you had Millionaires Row in places like, you know, Collinwood, Glenville, University Circle. This area never really had that, it really even at any point in its history, but there has been a game changer lately. I will note that the Opportunity Corridor Road, which didn't even exist a few years ago, if you ever driven on this corridor, basically, if you ever took I-70, if you're coming from this area, if you took I-71 or I-77 northbound and you got to I-490 and you went eastbound on I-490, that road used to end at East 55th Street. It does not anymore. They did a big project where they literally dug underneath East 55th Street, continued the road. It's not a highway, but it's a three-lane, you know, six-lane divided highway, basically, that goes all the way from East 55th Street to the south end of the Cleveland Clinic main campus on East 105th. And this road runs directly through Kinsman. Just within the year or two that this road has been out there, Orlando Baking Company, which is a longtime Cleveland staple bread producer, they have built a giant new warehouse and factory right along Opportunity Corridor. Their old facility was right there on East 75th Street. There's also Miceli Dairy Products, which is another local mainstay, this one being dairy products. If you've ever been on I-71 going through Wayne County, you might have seen where their main farm is. They actually have a giant barn with their logo on it. But their main facility is actually in Cleveland at Buckeye Road and East 91st Street, which is just off of Opportunity Corridor. And this company is expanding, and this company is building a new building on Opportunity Corridor as well. So, and then there's a couple other ones out there. M-Tech Corporation, that's another one that just went up near the corner of Opportunity Corridor and Rawlings Avenue. So you're starting to see the seeds of this, you know, economic opportunity. It's almost kind of like how for a long time in this country when you had the interstate highway system, when it, well, first the U.S. highway system back in the 20s, and then later the interstate highway system in the 50s and 60s, how much that spurred economic development in such areas. That's basically what Opportunity Corridor is starting to do for Kinsman. I'll just go through the median income. So back 2 years ago when I first did this neighborhood, the median income here was about $14,000. It was the lowest in all of Cleveland. It's a process, but that number is actually up to 18.5 as of last year. So if you think about it, that's an almost 25% increase in just 2 years. That's a pretty big deal, I think. And then if you look at from a home value perspective, well, okay. If you want to be a little bit negative, then you could say that, but true. If you want to look at it in terms of home value year over year is up 14% over the last year. It's 54,129. So this place has come around actually a long way from the days of Mike Polk saying buy a house for the price of a VCR. That doesn't really apply anymore, at least not in this area. I will be completely frank with you. This is, you know, kind of like, you know, you think about Detroit Shoreway, you think about Tremont back like 20 years ago when these areas were not nice. Kinsman's still kind of at its that area of its evolution. It's an area that's almost entirely African American. I'll just point that out, but it's, you know.
So if you're Frank, then who am I?
Are you Frank?
Yes.
But I got to say, if you're one of those like investors, I'll use the investing example. If you're somebody who wants to play the, you know, the startups basically, and you know, you have some money sitting around, you want to place, you know, on some riskier, you know, startup type stocks that might make you a huge profit or might possibly also go bankrupt. That's basically what Kinsman is. But I feel like you're more likely to make your money on this one, you know, as opposed to some of the other neighborhoods, particularly on the southeast side of town. So, you know, I looked around for other like businesses and other points of interest. There's really not a lot of them at this point, but I do think that that could be coming in the next. Once you start to see the residential areas, once you start to see the industrial side of a neighborhood come back, inevitably that starts to make things a lot more, how do I say, a lot more attractive for other businesses to come in. We saw it in Ohio City. We saw it in Detroit Shoreway. We've seen it in a few other areas. So I do think it could eventually come for Kinsman, but it is a slow evolution. But I do like the upside of this neighborhood going into the future. So that's Kinsman. You can wham that with the right hand.
All right. Very good. Another one in the bank. As we move right along here, we need to update our brackets.
Okay.
The first and second round of the NCAA tournament was this past weekend, and I gotta say, I think it's been a very good tournament thus far. The only downside, we have not had a buzzer beater yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of on.
There was one to send a game to overtime, but not one to win a game. And that's been a little bit disappointing. Oakland took out 3-seed Kentucky, which was the biggest upset of them all.
That was the one that generated a ton of headlines on the opening weekend, yeah. And deservedly so. This is the second time Kentucky is gacked in the first round now. Yeah. In the last 2 years in a row now? Or is it 2 and 3 years? I can't remember.
What's your opinion on the tournament thus far? Because you actually predicted a ton of upsets.
So I just didn't pick the right ones, basically.
Yeah.
You had 13 took out a 4. You had a 14 take out a 3. I was aiming bigger. I thought some of the 15s would actually take out 2s. That didn't happen. Mm. But, you know, so maybe I was aiming a little too high there. My main problem is that I didn't, if you look at my bracket, I didn't get enough games right in like 5 versus 12 and 8 versus 9, 7 versus 10. You know, that's sort of hurt. And obviously, my big flyer, literally, was taking Dayton all the way to the Final Four. They got knocked out in round two by Arizona, which I would have basically bet the bank that that wasn't going to happen. And I'm like, you shouldn't be shocked that a two seed has made the Sweet 16, but I am shocked that Arizona is still around. And yeah. I'm shocked that Iowa State is still around, too.
Yeah.
Those are two teams I would have just thought for sure were going to go out early based on their tournament history. But that hasn't come to pass, you know. And maybe it's just a case of, well, you know what? You know, it's a different group of players. It's a different mentality, different mindset. But it's, you know, some of those perennial choking teams have not done so yet. So, you know, maybe this could be. And I mentioned Purdue as well. You said last week that maybe Purdue could do what Virginia did, you know, lose in the first round as a one seed last year and then go on to win the whole thing the next season. That's still on the table, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be an interesting storyline if that ended up coming to pass. But I have to think that the most interesting storyline, actually, that came out of the entire first weekend of the tournament, round one and two, is North Carolina State.
Yeah, I picked them to lose in the first round.
This is a team that wasn't going anywhere, that was expected to lose in the first or second round of the ACC tournament and go home for the year. They ended up winning five games in 5 days to get to the tournament. They were not going to get in as that large. They got in that way. They're an 11 seed, and now they've won the first two games of the tournament as well.
Yeah.
The last time that they did anything resembling this was 1983. That year they won the national championship.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, like, I mean, it happened before. I mean, is it really that outlandish? I mean, we've had 11s meet the Final Four.
Yes, it's outlandish.
So, like, I would have to say they could at least do that. I mean, that's something we've seen previously. But at the same time, I think that's definitely added some spice to it. But, you know, like you say.
Let's see. I have, let's see, one, two, three, four. I have 11 of my Sweet 16 teams left.
That's pretty good.
I lost Auburn, Baylor, Kansas, Kentucky, and James Madison. I had James Madison beating Duke. That did not happen.
Duke very nearly went down in the first round.
I have not lost.
Got a little lucky.
I have not lost a Final Four team yet.
Hmm.
So what's interesting is I'm actually in the LOTL bracket challenge. I'm sitting in sixth, I believe, but I have I have a higher max than
potential
than our number one ranked bracket right now, which is my Uncle Tim. He has a max of 1620. My max is 1680. What's interesting is your brother Matthew is third, but he's essentially out of it already because his champion is gone. His max is only 1150.
Ooh, yeah, that hurts.
He's gotten 92.7% of his picks right, but he missed his national champion already. So he's he's in third.
You can't
but
lose your national champion in the first round.
He's in third, but he's effectively done already.
Yeah.
Particularly
if it ends up, I mean, really his only hope would be if the national champion ends up being somebody that nobody picked.
Yeah.
The odds of that are not great.
My buddy Mike Green is sitting in second right behind my Uncle Tim. He is tied for the highest max points remaining with 1740. Tied with former host of Living Off the Land, Jordan Gonzalez. Mike Green has Purdue winning it all. Good luck with that. And Jordan has the University of Houston, which could very well happen.
I'm so shocked.
What? Jordan, yeah. Of course. He's got a rep. Hey, man, yep. If Cleveland State was, I mean, obviously, if Bowling Green was in, they were good. I'd be picking
Bowling
Green.
If any school from within the state of Ohio had a decent chance to win, I would take them. I mean, hell, I took Dayton to the Final Four, and I'm now paying for it. But
yeah, so everything's still really up for grabs, except let's see. Who we have. We have 15 in our bracket challenge. Only three have lost their national champions. That would be your brother Matthew, who has Baylor, Brett Hoyer, who has Kansas, and my cousin Marcus O'Malley, who had Dayton winning the whole thing. So,
you know, when you go for a pick like that, you know, just like you're not even watching all the other games because, like, if you get that right, you're going to win the whole thing.
Here's what I wanted to bring up. sitting in last.
Is it really that bad?
Is my co-host, Steven Stefano.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So you have, you still have a decent max point percentage right now at 1420. You're higher than, obviously, the guys who...
I still have my champion, my runner-up, and my other Final Four team, so I must have just taken my water everywhere else.
Well, didn't you have a 16 seed winning and two 15s winning?
I had a 15 winning. I the two 15s winning. I didn't have any 16s.
Oh, okay. Let's see.
Yeah, round two was not very nice to me. In general, I didn't have Gonzaga. I didn't have NC State. I didn't have Duke. Off the top of my head, I did not have Iowa State. I did not have Alabama. I did not have Arizona. So I'm missing on a lot of these.
Yeah, I don't. How do I? Why did I?
But I'm just eyeballing this. Like, I have UNC North Carolina still. I have Illinois, you know, who's still in it. I had them in the Elite Eight. I have UConn winning the whole thing. I had San Diego State making the Sweet 16. They did. I had Marquette still. I had Marquette as the Final Four team. They're still in it. Purdue is, well, no, I don't think I took Purdue past the round of 16, so that I kind of need them to get beat at this point. I got Creighton still as well. I had them as a finalist. So I guess it's the teams that I had losing in this round that I mostly don't have at this point.
Why?
At least I wasn't dumb enough to take Akron to winning in the first round.
Why is this?
That was definitely a bridge too far. Yeah. Sorry, Zips.
Why am I having a hard time? Hold on.
To be completely honest with you, looking at these round of 16
so
matchups.
You got 180 out of 320 points in the round of 64. And
18. That's bad.
And 160 out of 320 in the round of 32.
And only 8 right out of 16 in the second round. I knew the second round was not good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean.
Those are not good numbers to win a tournament. And at this point, I'm not going to win this pool because I have Connecticut winning the whole thing. So somebody who did better in the first and second round is going to have Connecticut.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish at this point that I would have taken someone like Creighton or
especially you picked all
Marquette.
Those. Yeah, those upsets that you picked, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, interesting as we move along here. The Sweet 16 round begins tomorrow, and then the Elite Eight is Saturday and Sunday. So we will know who is in the Final Four by Sunday night.
Yes, we will. Just briefly going down the games here, Clemson versus Arizona, San Diego State versus Connecticut, Alabama versus North Carolina, and Illinois versus Iowa State are your games tomorrow. And then on Friday, North Carolina State versus Marquette, Gonzaga versus Purdue, Duke versus Houston, and Creighton versus Tennessee. And yeah, I think the overarching theme here is you only have one double-digit seed still left,
yeah.
North Carolina State, who I mentioned earlier.
Right.
The next highest seed after that is a 6.
Yep.
So you had a lot of chalk, and a lot more chalk than I was expecting. And a lot of it, I mean, there were some teams that went out in round one, like Kentucky and a couple others, but and Kansas, I think, went down in round two. But like other than that, round two was mostly all chalk.
Yeah, for the most part. I know. Well, I believe it was Saturday, the first day of the round of 32. All 8 favorites won.
Yeah, that's pretty rare.
Yeah,
but it does make for a more even and more unpredictable round of 16.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of. Coin toss matchups in the Sweet 16 for sure.
And even like when you get like even the one seeds now, like Houston, they got to play Duke. I mean, would it really be a surprise if Duke beat Houston? No.
No.
You know, Gonzaga versus Purdue, like Gonzaga's a 5, but would it really be that
completely
if Gonzaga
I completely missed on Gonzaga. I thought they were going to I think I had them losing in the first round.
I did too.
I had McNeese State beating them and they beat the crap out of them.
Which brings me to one of the interesting anecdotes of the first round. Gonzaga was beating McNeese State by so much that they actually started playing the Oakland-Kentucky game on the big screen inside the whatever they call the arena in Salt Lake City these days. Mark Few was not having it after the game. He basically said they should not be showing anyone else's game while our game is going on, because what really put him off was one of his guys was shooting a free throw, and like Oakland did something in the Kentucky game, and like everybody went,
because
the guy was shooting the free throw and he missed. So, he was just kind of put off by it. He said, like, if you have to watch another game while the game is going on, like, you shouldn't be in the arena. We should get somebody else in there, was his quote after the game.
Yeah, so. Well, blame McNeese State because they did not show up. So, but, we will see what happens. I got to say, UConn looks like the only team that, I mean, really...
They look like Villanova 2018 out there. They look like they're not getting beat.
Yeah,
anyone.
I was trying to think of the right way to describe them, but yeah, they just look like they're not going to be beat. Surprisingly, I actually think, and I didn't expect them to. These guys look very good. I think the team that's looked almost just as good as Purdue.
Yeah, they've looked really good.
I mean, they throttled Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
So you know. We'll see what happens with that. They've gotten to the Sweet 16 now. I mean, they've been, you know, last year obviously was the big one when they lost a 16 seed, but they're, like you said at the beginning with Virginia, like they are looking poised to be that team that loses to the 16 seed and then wins the whole damn thing the next year.
This next game could be it for them. While you were looking at how terrible my first and second round performance was, I was about to mention that I think the best matchup of the round of 16 is Gonzaga versus Purdue. Because both Gonzaga and Purdue have both looked awesome to this point.
That's going
to
be a great game.
That's 7:30 on Friday night. I'm going to be dialed into that one.
Oh, good. They got the timing right on that. That's
prime
time
they
on
nailed
Friday.
It.
That game, Houston and Duke is going to be great.
That's one of the late games on Friday. That's at 9:30.
Who does UConn play?
UConn plays against San Diego State.
Oh, a rematch of the national championship from last year.
How about that?
Yeah, San Diego State stays within 20 of UConn. That'll be an achievement.
I'm sure that's what the NCAA is going to bill it as, you know, the rematch. But like,
right,
knowing that, I mean, nothing against San Diego State. That's a great program, but like,
yeah,
anyone up against UConn right now, I'm taking UConn.
Then another big one is North Carolina and who are they playing?
Alabama.
Alabama, that's a big one.
North Carolina doesn't win that game easily. I don't know. I'm just a hater on SEC basketball. Almost all the SEC teams were terrible.
Yeah, Alabama's pretty much the only one.
Alabama and Tennessee are still left.
That's right, Tennessee.
Like six of them went down in round one.
That's my dad's pick, Tennessee.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So he's the only 10 we see.
Huh? He's paying homage to his dad, my late grandfather, who grew up in Tennessee and rooted for the Vols. So,
He probably wins the pool. If Tennessee
I would think so,
well.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that anybody else had Tennessee.
I don't think so, no. There was about four or five that had UConn, a couple that had Purdue. I think one person had North Carolina.
That might be
Jordan
a winner, too. I mean, some people probably went with UNC just as a name, and they are a one seed, but they were the weakest one seed, so.
Yeah. I feel like we're missing a major matchup in Sweet 16 that we haven't.
Creighton versus Tennessee.
That's a big one, yeah.
Illinois versus Iowa State.
You and I both have Creighton going to the Final Four, I believe.
Yeah, I have them in the title game, actually.
That's right.
Which, if that happens, that might still bail me out because nobody else is going to have that, I don't think.
Yeah.
But who knows? Yeah, go Jays. I need you guys to win that one.
Yeah, so it should be another great weekend of college basketball. We are so close to good weather, nice weather. I know April can be a little bit wet, but I feel it. We're starting to creep into the 50s. It's college basketball is about to end. My favorite, 4-day, sporting event is, which happens almost always on the weekend of my birthday, is coming up in a couple weeks. We are so close, folks. So close to getting out of this crap weather.
It's going
to
be sunny the next 3 days. It's not going to be
warm,
but
yeah,
at least the sun will be out. I mean, it's one of those days where if you're not careful, you might actually get sunburned, even though it's like 50 degrees.
Yeah, I know. Well, I need it. I'm going to Florida in a month, so.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in 5 weeks. Yeah, so I need the sun. But anyway.
At any rate, I do want to mention the women's tournament as well.
Oh, yeah.
So much like the men's tournament, we had a lot of chalk in the first two rounds of the women's tournament.
I feel like that happens in the women's tournament way more than the men's.
It's partially because if you're a top four seed, you actually host in the first two rounds.
Right. So that didn't help Ohio State, but anyway.
I was going to mention that. So like the only two or three seed that got knocked out in the first two rounds.
You know the people at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse and the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission were watching that game and they were just like, ugh.
And to make it even worse, they lost to Duke.
Ugh.
Oh, what an odious team.
Yeah.
That's really too bad. You know, Ohio State was so good in the first half of the season. It seemed like it might have been a case of peak too early. They just, you know, they never really had that look after they beat Iowa.
Yep.
And, you know, they were still winning games, but they didn't look as great. And then for whatever reason, it didn't come off for them in the tournament. They end up getting beat at home by Duke. That's really too bad. Duke is the highest remaining seed left as a 7 seed. They actually get to play Connecticut next, which, you know, whenever UConn's involved, it's always a must-see game for the most part. We'll see if Duke can, you know, mount a bit of a Cinderella run there. But quickly going through the bracket here, you've got Indiana versus South Carolina, Oregon State versus Notre Dame. Those are your Gonzaga versus Texas and NC State versus Stanford. Those are your games on Friday. And then Saturday, Baylor versus USC, Duke versus UConn, LSU versus UCLA, and Colorado against Iowa. So
Iowa put in a scare in their last game. If you just look at the score, they ended up winning by 10, but they were only up by like one or two with like 5 minutes left in that game.
Yeah, there were some people that were sweating in Iowa City, for sure.
People sweating here in Northeast Ohio because I had a bet on them.
I
needed them to win by double digits, and they ended up winning by 10 right at the end.
Oh, you were like, phew.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I woke up the next morning, and I just looked at it because I assumed that I had lost. They're only up by one point with like 5 minutes left. I'm like, they're not gonna outscore the other team by 10. Well, the other team just kept fouling them, and they just kept making free throws.
That's what can happen. That's why it's hard to bet spreads on basketball because, like,
it's really hard.
You know, you can have a game where the team pulls the starters, the other team hits some threes down the stretch, and you might not cover
it's
that.
It's also really hard to bet over unders in basketball because, like, if you have the under in a basketball game, and the team just the other team just keeps fouling at the end of the game, you're like, stop fouling,
right?
Or if you have the over and you want the team to keep fouling. But they just like they're down like six with like 17 seconds left, so they just like give up and they just let them dribble out the clock and you start screaming and yelling because you lost the over by like two.
Yeah, it's a bad beat over, just like Super Bowl 57 was, or Super Bowl 58, excuse me.
Yeah,
I still can't believe the over hit in that game. That's ridiculous. So anyway, that is your tournament update. And by this time next week, we will know who's in the men's Final Four and who is in the women's Final Four.
And who's going to be coming to Cleveland.
In Cleveland.
Yeah, to the Romo Fijo. So,
And how difficult it will be for the fans of those teams to find hotels because they're already going to be all taken because of the eclipse.
Yeah, probably. I know. Boy, this...
Hopefully the NCAA did their homework and reserved all those in advance.
You've got the women's Final Four... The eclipse, and
Guardians
then,
opening
and
day.
Then, well, I was just about to say, and then this happens. The best is all right here.
Talking baseball.
Guardians baseball.
Talking
guards.
Guardians baseball.
Talking guards.
Nobody plays harder than the guards.
Oh, man.
I love that theme.
Oh, it's so good. Of course, they don't use it anymore because that's not what the team's called now.
Right.
So let's So let's
that'll be upon us very soon, folks.
Tomorrow, actually.
Hmm.
The Guardians open up tomorrow night in Oakland. The Guardians.
So they play like the first 9 games on the road?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is a good thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be able to play if it was here this weekend, but it'd be chilly, obviously.
This is the song they currently play. Yes, sir. They love this club here in Cleveland. 20 points, if you can guess that movie quote. Yes, we are another season of baseball on the corner of Carnegie and Ontario is upon us. And ladies and gentlemen, like the current state of the ballpark during renovations, this team is a work in progress.
Yeah, the ballpark, oof.
Ugh. Yeah, you're going to have about 25% of the seats at the ballpark are going to be a very nice, beautiful navy blue color. And then the remaining 75% are still going to be that hunter green color that have been there for the last 30 years. That's going to be, I've now heard, not just a two-year process. That's going to be a three-year process. To replace all of those seats.
Are they going to be continuing to work on that during the season? Or
no. What they've replaced, they've replaced.
Hmm.
You can't really do that. I mean, I guess you can when the team's on the road. Like if they're on like a 10-game road trip or something like that, I guess you could do some of that, but I think they're just relegating it to off season work.
Hmm.
So but Guardians begin the season. It's a season of I don't know. For me, hope is the wrong word. Because this is about as hopeless as I've felt about this baseball team in about 12 years.
It would have been 2012, and yeah, that was pretty hopeless.
That's when Terry Francona took over the ball club. So, listen, we have a new manager. The Guardians literally spent no money in the offseason. Actually,
shocking.
I take that back. They spent $4 million on a third-string catcher.
It's the baseball equivalent of $6 in your back pocket and a Twix.
Yeah, it's like placing a $5 bet on FanDuel. So, literally, they are going with all kids, pretty much. Listen, any chance that this team has this year completely and unilaterally falls on whether the starting pitching can stay healthy. Is number one. If the starting pitching stays healthy, they could have one of the best starting pitching staffs in baseball. The problem is, which is it's felt like over the last 2 to 3 years, it's been the same formula. The Guardians are going to have to win baseball games 4-3, 3-2, 3-1. You know, if opponent gets to 5 runs, we're cooked.
Most days, unless we have a random day where we just get 11 or 12 runs.
Yeah.
It seems like they like to do that every so often, too.
Right, and then the next day they'll get shut out.
Yeah. No consistency whatsoever in the offensive production.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know if you have any differing view than I do.
I don't really.
I'm struggling to come up with a season-long tagline word, buzzword to sum up my feelings about the Guardians this year. I mean, I don't want to say hopeless because that's not true. Listen, I may be negative about the baseball team on Twitter and on this podcast, but I'll tell you what. There is still nothing better in this city than a warm summer evening, a Friday or a Saturday, and going down to that ballpark. I don't care if the team is 40-70, and just going down there and being at that ballpark and watching a baseball game. There's just nothing like it. And even if the stadium is under construction, renovation, whatever, it's still fantastic. You go to the stadium, let's say you sit on the first baseline, and you're just watching the sun. Obviously, for the first few innings, the sun is probably going to be an issue for you to see the field, so just bring sunglasses. You're watching the sun go down, and as it goes down behind the third baseline stands, it's just a great time. It's a great atmosphere. It always will be. But I don't know. I guess I'm going to go into the season not having any expectations, and if the team finishes about 500 or somehow finishes over 500 this year, I'm going to be very pleasantly surprised, and I'm going to be happy. I'm expecting this team to win sub 70 games.
Ooh, ouch. Ooh. What is the Vegas over under, do you know?
That's a good question. Let's look that up. You know, give me your thoughts as I'm looking that up.
And while you do that, it's funny you mentioned going the aesthetics of going to a baseball game and how great it is in the summertime. And you know, I'm not the kind of person who goes to a game to people watch or to socialize. A lot of people do that. It's not my style. Mm-hmm. But even I can't help but notice that if you were to make a list of the places where you would go in Cleveland where you would be likely to run into some of the best looking or quote unquote hottest people in Cleveland, Progressive Field is near the top of the list. All the good looking guys and girls of the city, I swear, you go to any game, particularly in summertime, you're gonna see that. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things, you know, people like baseball here. They just do. You know, it's reflected in the TV numbers. May not reflect in the attendance numbers so much when the team isn't spending and isn't winning, but you know, that's partly on the fault of ownership, not because of any of us. So
according to covers.com, which that's just off of a straight Google search, I don't know how legitimate this is, but the over-under on wins in the Guardians, boy, kick me in the keister, is 79.5.
Okay, so you'd be going with the under.
Oh, my God. I just got a freaking notification. You know the Cavs lost to the Hornets tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously?
Listen, we'll get into the Cavs. I have my confidence That's level bad. In this basketball team going into the playoffs is that much.
I was giving them a pass for them losing in Minneapolis and for losing in Miami. They came back and they beat the Hornets the next night, but
no
there's
excuses.
No two ways around this one. That's bad. And we'll
you
get
let them
in
score
second.
118 points in regulation against you. Garbage.
Oh, boy. Anyhow, anyway. 79.5, so
just under 500.
Yeah, that's right around where I would have put them. So, boy
I'm considering just banging the under on that.
Yeah, it sounds like you were looking at 67, 68, 69 wins, something like that. I was thinking if you would have asked me, I would have been 78 and 84. So, I guess I'm just barely on the under two, but it's much again. I think the range of possibilities is very high with this team. And it's like what you said. Starting pitching is good. This team could be in the postseason. Starting pitching doesn't stay healthy or has problems.
FanDuel also
we're in big trouble.
They set their over under 79.5. Over is -110, under is -110. It is right there.
Because I think the offense is what it is. They'll give you 12 runs one day, and then they may not score 12 runs for the next week.
Yeah.
You know, the bullpen, I think, is okay. I don't think it's, amazing, but it's not bad. So if you're ahead in a lot of games, they'll convert the majority of those. But, this team will go as far as the starting pitching takes it. There's
100%.
No doubt about that. And that, to me, again, leads to a very wide range. If everything, the rails just completely come off and life after Terry is just really hard, we could lose 100 games. But if it's a situation where starting pitching is good, the offense maybe overperforms a little bit, and, you know, the old mentality from Terry is still kind of hanging around vicariously, this team could win over 90 games and be in the playoffs. So, grab bag, you know, you just... Hard to predict, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup is very unproven, obviously. You know, obviously Jose Ramirez is in there. You know what you're going to get from him. Josh Naylor had a really good year last year. Let's see if he can keep it up. Andrés Giménez had a bad year last year. Let's see if he can bounce back. And then, you know, there was a few of the guys that got some playing time last year but didn't get a ton. You know, like Will Brennan, Brian Rocchio, who's a very highly touted prospect. He's going to start the season as our shortstop. Yeah, we'll see. Stephen Kwan is going to be batting leadoff for the third straight year. You kind of know what you're going to get from him. It's going to be interesting to see what we get from Josh's brother, Bo Naylor, as the catcher. If he can live up to the hype, it's a lot of young guys that have not gotten a lot of major league time thus far that are going to, for lack of a better word, or, you know, we're going to get to see what they got. So if these guys are how the Guardians tout them in their farm system, it could surprise, and the Guardians could win 79 games. Listen, I think, and this is not a knock against the new manager, Stephen Vogt. I'm rooting for him. He seems like a good guy. Quite honestly, he seems like a Terry Francona type of guy. But I feel like FanDuel and all these places forgot that Terry Francona was not still the manager of this ball club when they set the over-under line.
I would have to agree.
So, and again, if I'm rooting like hell for this team to hit the over, that's why I'm not actually going to bet the under, even though I really think that it's going to be under.
Life's too short to bet the under.
Well, that, and also, why would I bet my team? Like I'm not.
And you got to root against your team for the
right
season.
Listen, I'm not mad at this. I'm mad at the ownership because they don't spend any money. I'm not mad at this team. Like, I was mad at the entire Cleveland Browns organization in 2016 and 2017. If sports betting was legal back then, best believe in 2017, I might have put my life savings that they would have. The over under could have been 4 wins.
You know, damn right well I would have.
And I would have put the under my life savings on the under.
I mean, all the way from 2004 to 2019, practically, I would have been on the. I would have maybe only not hit the under maybe 3 times over that span, 2007, 2014, and maybe one other year.
Yeah, so. We'll see with the Guardians. They open up with the hapless Oakland A's, so hopefully the Guardians can get off to a hot start. Shane Bieber will be making his 5th opening day start. More than likely will be his last with the Guardians, whether he finishes the season with the Guardians or not. He's not coming back, I don't think.
Yeah, that'll be dependent on the team's record in July as to whether the Guardians look to move him or not.
Yeah, well,
Listen. I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't move him in the offseason, quite frankly.
Well, it's because he really didn't have any trade value in the offseason. He's coming off a season where he was hurt basically the whole year. The Guardians are banking on him returning form and them being able to get a lot more for him at the trade deadline this year. So even if we are in contention this year,
You think he goes regardless?
Yeah, absolutely. We were a game out of first place last year, and I know he doesn't have the career numbers like a Shane Bieber, but he was pitching as our best pitcher last year, Aaron Civale, and we traded him even though we were a game out of first place.
Yeah, that was a gut punch.
And
that's the sort of thing that really gets fans fed up with ownership.
Yeah. Well, listen, we could be contending this year near the trade deadline. I think just like last year, only because we play in an absolute garbage division, we really aren't going to be a team that's considered to be a contender to win it all, even if we're winning the division by the trade deadline. I mean, it's just matter of fact.
If we broaden this out just a little bit, is there a single team in the AL Central that has any real shot whatsoever at going to the World Series?
No.
Yeah.
Who?
It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
The whole division has stunk for several years
now. You want to know what the Chicago White Sox over-under is? 61 like and a half.
Oh, I was going to say 59. That's what I was
Yeah.
So
I didn't look
so
at the
wait
other.
A minute. If they lose 100 games, they hit the over.
Yeah. Let's see. Other teams in our division.
That is a team. When we did the 24-game exercise last year, the White Sox were one of the teams we contracted out of baseball.
Yeah.
They have no, like, you look at their whole history. They've won, like, what, two World Series ever? That's not any better than we have. Like, there's and they're in a secondary situation to one of the storied franchises in baseball in their city.
Which is hilarious.
There's
because
no right for the White Sox.
It's hilarious because that franchise is pretty terrible, too.
They should get moved or contracted, honestly.
Well, there is talk that they could move to Nashville.
That would make a lot of sense.
So anyway, other teams in the AL Central, their win totals. In last was the Chicago White Sox, 61.5. Coming in fourth is the Royals at 74.5. The Guardians are third at 79.5. And then right there with the Tigers.
Wow, the Tigers.
The Tigers
are
80.5, just a game above us. And then the Twins are at 86.5. So the best team in the division's over under is 86.5.
Well, just going by those numbers, I would be going over on Minnesota. I'd be going under on Detroit. I guess under just very barely on the Guardians. I'd be going under on Kansas City. Probably over on the White Sox just because, I mean, they'd have to lose 102 games to be under. Like, that just, it seems hard to believe a team could be that bad. But, I mean, Oakland was that bad a year ago.
There are two teams with a triple digit over-under. Can you guess them?
How many teams?
Two.
Well, Oakland's got to be one.
No, I mean, like, wins.
Oh, wins. Okay, if you're going by losses, Oakland would have to be. For wins, I would Atlanta?
That's one.
L.A. Dodgers?
That's two.
Okay. So interesting, not Texas, the defending World Series champion.
Texas is at 88.5.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the
highest number in the AL is the Astros at 93.5.
Okay.
The Yankees are second at 91.5.
Boy, that's some disrespect right there. I guess the odds makers are saying, well, Texas, I guess that was a fluke. You're not going to do it again. Wow.
Yeah. Baltimore at 90.5. They're going to be very good this year.
Yeah, I do think the Orioles are. In fact, they're a nice dark horse choice for World Series, I think.
Yeah. What's interesting is in the NL, there are two teams. The Dodgers are at 103.5. The Braves are at 101.5. No other team
The Astros
is
next?
Is even in the 90s in the NL.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the only other teams you'd even think of putting up
the
there.
The Phillies are 89.5.
Yeah.
And then
nobody in the NL Central other than
the next highest team is, let's see, there's a couple. You have to go all the way down to 84.5.
San Diego, maybe?
84.5, and there's three teams that are tied for that. The Diamondbacks, the Cubs, and the Cardinals.
Wow, not the Padres.
Padres, 83.5, tied with the Giants.
Oh, man, I'd be going over on the Padres for sure. 83?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So those are some of your futures betting lines there on Major League Baseball. Okay, we got to talk about the Cavs. This team is becoming absolutely infuriating. And I'm at zero confidence for this basketball team in the playoffs. Absolutely zero. This team's going to fall down to like the fifth seed.
So last week, the Cavs, in real time, we were talking about the Cavs Heat game, and they ended up losing that game by three. I think the theme for me right now is that the Cavs are not winning close games right now. And that is, I mean, the game against Indiana late last Monday aside, they've had a bunch of games now where they're just not performing down the stretch, and it's actually starting to become a little bit of a problem. And the other thing I've noticed is that outside of that game with Indiana, which I aforementioned, they're not winning games on the road either. They lost at Houston. Houston's not good. They lost at Charlotte tonight. Charlotte's not good. And the two teams that they played recently on the road that were good this week, they lost pretty convincingly at Minnesota, last Friday night, and then they got pounded by Miami on Sunday.
We lost to a team tonight that is 10-24 at home.
The Hornets are terrible.
Horrible.
It's just, I mean, we pounded them at home just two nights ago. So, like, that's what we should do, quite frankly. So,
yeah,
really,
they don't get any credit for what they did at home against Charlotte a couple days ago.
1-3 this week.
3-7 over our last 10. It's not good.
Is not good. You know what's even crazier? Miami right now is holding the 7th spot in the East. They're actually 4-6 in their last 10, which means they're 2-6 in their last 8 against teams not including the Cavs.
Yeah, they've had a couple bad losses over the last week. But guess what? They've beaten the Cavs twice in the last couple weeks.
Yeah. We said a few weeks ago that the schedule was going to be hard in March, and it has been. But that's what makes a game like this hurt even more.
Inexcusable.
You really couldn't afford
inexcusable
to drop a game like this. So now you're 44-29. You're now only up on the – no, actually, you've now fallen behind the Knicks on percentage points.
We're in fourth. We're only 3 games ahead of Indianapolis for sixth.
For sixth. You're a little further ahead than Miami and Philly, who are 7th and 8th, but still – I mean, the more valid one is Orlando, who is now only a game behind you for the fourth seed. So you're looking at a situation now where you've got 9 games left, and you're gonna have to win more than half of them. Otherwise, you're not gonna have home court advantage in the first round, and that's not a good thing. Even if it is a team like Orlando, who wasn't in the playoffs a year ago and is just kind of on the up and up now.
Orlando is the best defensive team in the NBA.
I'm scared at this point too, because you look at the games that are coming. The next game is against Philadelphia. That's a team that we cannot seem to beat.
It was reported today that Donovan Mitchell will be back on Friday.
Thankful for that, and thankful that game is home, because
and they still don't have Joel Embiid.
You know who I mentioned road games, and I did that on purpose, because after you play Philly on Friday, guess what? You got to go out west for 5 games.
Oy.
And the first game against that is against the Joker in Denver.
Well, that's a loss.
So on Sunday afternoon, that's a national game at 3:30. So, like, who boy.
Listen, there's no excuses. There are none. I don't care. I don't care about injuries. I don't care about any of that, because you know what happened in December when we had injuries? That's when we went on that long-ass winning streak.
December and January.
I don't want to hear about injuries, because we were winning earlier in the season.
February.
You want to know something? JB Bickerstaff, I don't know the exact records. His teams are almost every single year he's been a head coach awful after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Awful.
I mean,
we were bad last year.
We've seen this movie before.
We were bad 2 years ago after the All-Star break. Look, I have no faith that this team is going to get out of the first round. None. And
what would they have to do over these last 9 games to kind of bring you back from the ledge?
Well, to be quite honest with you, they're in a prove it to me mode regardless, because of what happened last year.
So the last 9 games kind of don't mean anything. It just boils down to playoffs.
Man,
unless
we go 0-9 and fall into the play-in.
Yeah, I mean, odds.
But even if we go 9-0 or 8-1 in the last 9 games, like, okay, fine. Well, get out of the first round.
Right.
They have to get out of the first. If they don't get out of the first round, JB Bickerstaff, you might as well just not even take the plane ride back home.
Yeah, I would say he's gone if they don't win a
gone.
Series this year. That would be very fair.
I would find it hard to believe Donovan Mitchell would probably re-sign with the Cavs if they bow out in the first round again.
It's really
hard to tell. There is a lot at stake with this basketball team over the next several weeks.
It is really hard to tell what's going on in Donovan Mitchell's mind. The media will have you think one thing and then another thing, and the national people are saying one thing, the local people are saying another, and
he's not saying anything.
He's not outspoken at all. He's keeping everything close to the vest. He's not even really giving any clues on social media. So I don't think that's something I want to put too much time into, but you're absolutely right.
Well, I'm just foreshadowing. But
it's a big deal. I mean, my gut feeling is he's probably gone regardless.
Yeah.
But I'm just a negative Nancy
that. The thing about it is he's not a free agent after this year. So, but what's going to happen is the Cavs are going to offer him an extension, and if he doesn't accept it, then they're going to trade him.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. But listen, the way that this team has played over the last couple weeks, I'm about as down on this team as I possibly can. Listen, if they finish the season 7-2 and, you know, things are looking good for the rest of the year or for the playoffs, they get a good matchup. I don't know what that would be. Because even though I'm down on them, I want to play the Knicks in the first round. I got to see it.
Is a little more of a possibility now that that could happen than it was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
The most obvious scenario where that would occur would be if Orlando passed both New York and Cleveland, dropping them into fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – or either the Knicks or the Cavs hit the skid and they end up in the 3-6. I mean, that is possible too. Right now, our most likely first-round opponents would be either New York, Orlando, or Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So, which the latter two I'm not feeling too terrible about given their performance this year, but, you know, having to play anybody, because the two teams I don't want to see are New York and Miami, quite frankly.
Yeah, I don't want to see Miami, but would be Miami would be a guaranteed loss.
I don't want to see Philly either, but like with Miami and Philly down 7th and 8th right now, I'm really hoping that Indiana doesn't fall or Orlando don't completely fall apart down the stretch, that those two teams stay 5-6. So
well, the thing about Philly is they would probably get Joel Embiid back for the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. They're not going to be your garden variety 8 seed.
No.
Well, they're not going to be Boston if they're the 8 seed. But no. Like if they end up 7th and they're playing Milwaukee, that's not going to be a walk in the park for Milwaukee.
Could you imagine if Milwaukee goes 1 seed, 2 seed, and loses in the first round both years?
Oh, my word. Talk about a fan base that'd be ready to jump off whatever bridge.
They've already they already fired Budenholzer after they were the 1 seed and lost. They already fired his replacement halfway through the season this year, and they hired Doc Rivers.
They've not been as good since they did that either.
And
I didn't like that move when they did it. And
you know, all that stuff's happened after Jimmy Haslam bought a 25% ownership stake in that team.
Ooh, do you think this is like kind of a a Joker or the Penguin kind of a moment here, where he's like,
I don't know.
Trying to do the Cavs' dirty work for him.
By the way, speaking of the Haslams, they're building a stadium in Brook Park.
That seems to be. I mean, Jim Donovan had a report on WKYC just a couple days ago that basically laid
that
out
was,
what his
that was
feelings
yesterday.
Were,
yeah,
and he's on board with that.
They were at the owners' meetings and they said. We're down to two options. A new roofed stadium outside of downtown Cleveland or a $1 to $1.2 billion renovation of Brown Stadium, which is not happening.
No.
Because half of that would have to be funded by the city, and the city is not ponying up $600 million to renovate the current stadium. And the Haslams are not putting up $600 million to renovate that piece of crap on the lake.
I wouldn't call it a piece of crap.
Oh, Brown Stadium?
That seems a little harsh.
Brown Stadium is one of the worst stadiums in all of NFL, by far.
I mean, the National Raiders
absolutely
don't seem to agree. Most of them have it somewhere between 18 and 22.
They don't live.
It's not worse than the league.
They don't live here.
Oh, boy.
Name stadiums that are worse.
Everbank Field, for one. Highmark Stadium, for another.
What's Highmark?
That's Buffalo. FedEx Field.
Okay, but
the biggest piece of crap of all.
But they're already getting. Buffalo's already confirmed getting a new stadium, so I don't even count them.
Okay. Okay, so I can't throw Nashville in there either then.
No.
Because Nissan Stadium is not as good either.
Nashville, I would consider basically the same.
Like, analog stadiums to me would be like Charlotte, Pittsburgh, Baltimore.
They're all garbage. Baltimore's.
I would put them. You could put them either side of Brown Stadium.
Baltimore's going. Is going to be going through a $600 million renovation in the next few years.
I'd put Brown Stadium over Soldier Field too.
No. I would not. It's one of the worst stadiums in the NFL. It doesn't even have a service level in the stadium that goes 360 degrees around the stadium.
Is that a problem?
Yeah. Service level. You have to be able to get to and from through the stadium if you're working there. That stadium is garbage, and it always has been garbage, to be honest with you.
Wow, I'm surprised at the ferocity of this take by you.
I hate that stadium, and I always have.
Might as well take this off of your table. I'm holding up the replica at Brown Stadium right now. Should I just take this home?
I hate that stadium. Well, it's already been smashed. There was a statue. There was a statue of Tim Couch in there.
I hate
that stadium
in there now.
Hate it.
Oh, geez. All right.
And it's even uglier because the owners put Tennessee-shaped scoreboards in the stadium. We're not in Tennessee. We're in Ohio.
I happen to like the shape of the scoreboards, to be honest.
Get the hell out of here. They
it's not any more oddly shaped than Paul Brown, which Brown Stadium is also better than.
They cannot demolish that stadium quick enough.
Okay.
My opinion.
All right.
It is horrendous.
You're here first, folks.
They're building a new stadium in Brook Park. And it's going to be domed, and they're going to build a mixed-use area around it with hotels, restaurants, businesses, all that sort of stuff. So they've also ruled out any other site of building a new stadium in downtown Cleveland because there really isn't the land to do it. I thought maybe the post office area, which was southeast of Progressive Field, but for what the Browns want to do, there's not enough space. The Browns don't just want to build a stadium. They want to do what the Patriots did in New England, what Dallas has done in Arlington. Well, not just Arlington, but the Fort Worth where the practice facility is. They've turned that into like a little like friggin' hotels and shops and restaurants and all that sort of stuff. As we've talked about before, they've hired the firm that built U.S. Bank Field in Minnesota, and SoFi Stadium in L.A. So they're doing it. Yeah. I think their announcement where they said, we're equally evaluating a renovation downtown in Cleveland or a roofed stadium outside of downtown Cleveland, I think that was to just once again put pressure on the city to try and come up and save face with some sort of last-ditch pitch to the team. They're moving out of downtown Cleveland. So that is happening, my opinion. I am almost willing to step my reputation on it, whatever that is.
Well, I mean, Jim Donovan is too. So, I mean, yeah. He's the voice of the team. So
they said they are in negotiations with government entities. I would imagine that means the state and the county to possibly pay for part of this new structure. That's what they did in Columbus with Lower.com Field. I think that the Haslams paid for about 75% of that construction. It was just over $300 million. And then the state and the county, what county is that in Columbus?
Franklin County,
I think, kicked in the other, and the city of Columbus kicked in the other 25%. But that's where we're headed. Obviously, this is going to be a lot more than $300 million. I mean, you're looking at $2 billion probably.
And that turned out to be a great investment for Columbus right off the bat.
Oh, sure.
MLS Cups in 2020 and 2023.
Sure. Well, it wasn't open in 2020, but
it was already under construction.
Yeah.
Then.
Oh, yeah. So, but, yeah. We got any other news?
We have some other news to talk about here. We've hit pretty much every sport imaginable tonight except for, we didn't talk about hockey, but I will just very quickly mention that the Monsters are having their best season in terms of records since the Calder Cup winning season in 2016.
They also, so, I believe, they're leading the league in attendance.
Is that right?
I think they're putting, on average, 9,000 seats, 9,000 butts in seats.
From minor league hockey, that's excellent.
Fantastic, yeah.
They're pulling in more than like the Toronto Marlies in some of these teams. Wow.
I don't even think the Toronto Marlies arena holds 9,000.
It probably doesn't. In fact, AEW was there last week. We saw that arena. And yeah, I don't think it does. So, yeah, a quick shout out to the Monsters there. That was not my another news segment, though. That actually has to do with soccer for the second time in 3 weeks. So, while everybody was, rightfully watching NCAA tournament games, and if they were watching anything else, maybe following the Cavs' inglorious fall over the last couple of weeks. This was also an international match window for soccer. Dan and I, of course, are both big soccer fans, but I feel like our fandom origin was a little different. Dan got into the club game in the very early days, whereas I got my introduction to the sport more through the international game.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true. That's not true.
I mean, that's sort of normalized out, particularly after I started to follow Newcastle United in 2013. But, we have our teams of, you know, our family's origin that we also root for, Italy for Dan and Albania for me. It was a scary match window for Albania. They lost twice to Chile and Sweden, but I digress. The main point of it, the main focal point, of course, was for the U.S. men's national team. The CONCACAF Nations League finals were this past match window, and Dan, I think you're probably going to have a different take on where I'm going to go with this, but there's something that has been really bothering me for a long time, and I'm about to lay it down right here.
Okay.
So, last Thursday night, the USA plays Jamaica. Jamaica scores early, first minute of the game. It's like, wow, okay, Thunderbolt. U.S. has a dumpy performance, and they end up getting bailed out only because Jamaica scores an own goal in the final minute of regulation. USA scores twice in the overtime. They win this game 3-1 to advance to the final against, not surprisingly, Mexico, who beat Panama. So,
Dos a cero, by the way.
Yeah, I was getting to that part. Before I even get there, prior to this match window, and then especially after the Jamaica game, all the talk, all of the consternation, all of the anger, all of the frustration that was being vented by fans, and I use fans in air quotes, of the U.S. men's national team, it came to a boiling point in the lead up to the Mexico game. It has gotten so toxic among some parts of the U.S. men's national team fan base that you had people literally rooting against the USA for their main rival team. And why on earth would this even be considered remotely acceptable? Because apparently that was the only way. And these same people were actually upset, crestfallen, that the U.S. managed to pull out that game against Jamaica. Because to these people, goal number one and the only goal in their minds is to have Greg Berhalter fired. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a coach that is 44-12-14 in his tenure as U.S. men's national team coach. Has won the CONCACAF Nations League 3 times in a running. Won the CONCACAF Gold Cup in 2021, largely with a B roster. Was the only coach of the only nation in North America that made it out of the group stage in the 2022 World Cup. Mexico didn't do that. Costa Rica didn't do that. Canada didn't do that. Why on earth are so many people wanting this guy gone? I don't get it for the life of me. And it's gotten to a point where it's just utterly ridiculous. And I've just had it with these people.
Well,
they're being bad
it.
Fans.
Well,
quite
you've
frankly,
had it.
If I was
you've
the
had
USSF,
it with me then because I want him,
if
I want
I was
him
the
fired
USSF,
for years.
I would be taking notes, watching all these people on social media, identifying these people, and stadium banning them and
why?
Not allowing them in the games.
Because they don't want a coach. Because they don't like
because they're not good fans.
Why are they not good fans?
You don't.
Okay, I
take
that back.
Against the team
that
you're playing against your primary rival.
Yeah, that I agree.
A continental championship.
That I agree with. I do want Greg Berhalter fired, but I'm not rooting for Mexico. And all the things that you rattled off, I don't give him credit for because this is by far the most talented team that this nation has ever had. So he should be doing these things. Like these aren't accomplishments for me. Again. I know you like to champion CONCACAF, but if he was doing this in Europe, fine. That'd be a totally different ballgame. But this is by far the most talented team that this country has ever had. He should be doing these things. He should be getting out of the group in the World Cup. He should be the best team in CONCACAF year after year after year. I don't care what Costa Rica's done. I don't care what Mexico, fine. Mexico is the only other country that's like historically on who should be on the U.S.'s level. I could give two craps what Costa Rica's done or what Panama has done or what Honduras has done. I know Honduras probably isn't in that category, but whatever.
They
I don't
were
care.
Until just recently.
I don't care. Like, these are all things. All these things that you're rattling off as accomplishments, these, yeah, okay, technically they're accomplishments, but the things that they should be doing. I agree with you that we shouldn't be rooting for Mexico so we can get our coach fired. Like, that's ridiculous. But I think we need to raise our level of expectation for the U.S. men's national team. And I think that that's the only way that this nation is going to be more respected around the world when it comes to soccer. the accomplishments that you rattled off in defense of this coach, to me, do not justify him keeping his job. He should be doing these things. So if he continues to do them, yeah, maybe he should keep his job. But for me, it's more so than on the field. There are things that go on behind the scenes that are more so the reason that people want Berhalter fired. I don't know exactly what those things are because I haven't studied them. But just talking to people I know that follow the UN's men's national team a lot closer than I do. Do I watch the games? Sure. Do I know the inner workings of the team? Not really. I just go by what people tell me. And when people tell me, every single person that I talk to really do not want him to continue to be the coach of this team. So that's what I go by. I would never root for Mexico, so I'm not that much of an ignoramus. But I don't think he has... he is above reproach just because of the accomplishments that you rattled off. That's my thought.
So I think you brought up two good points here. The CONCACAF versus the standard in Europe and the rest of the world. And we'll get to see that actually in a few months' time when the Copa America happens. We'll get to play against the teams from South America.
Yeah.
But the other part of, like, maybe it's not the results, but maybe it's like the nuances or how he manages the team that people don't like. I know he had the whole situation with the Reynas back during the World Cup, and that was all weird, and how Daniel Reyna was basically trying to blackmail him for a something that he did with his wife back in the 80s or the 90s, something like that. Like it was all just strange. But it just, I don't know. Like, I feel like if that was really a problem for the players, that you would have situations where certain players like Gio Reyna, like Christian Pulisic, like Tyler Adams, would be like, nah, don't call me into the team. I'm not going to play for you.
Yeah,
it hasn't risen to that.
Yeah,
level.
But you don't have to get to that level before you make a change. I mean, most of these players are not going to just say no. I'm not going to play for my country, like in the World Cup or the Copa America or things like that. Like, yeah, I mean, you get to that point and you are past the point of no return, and you probably should have made the decision a long time before that. It doesn't need to get to that point where you have to make a change. But, yeah, I don't know.
What do you so if they're going to make a change, the logical time to do it at this point would be after the Copa America. And they probably would have to have an unsatisfactory result at the Copa America for that to happen.
Yeah.
Last time the USA played in the Copa America was 2016. They actually won their group and won a knockout round game against Ecuador before they got steamrolled by Argentina in the semifinal. If you get a similar result this time, you're going with Greg Berhalter into the World Cup in 2026. No
Probably.
Questions asked. But what would it have to be? Cause now, full disclosure, the US's group is Bolivia, Panama, and Uruguay. They only have one good team in their group. So this offers a little bit of an out for all of you that don't like this guy. If the U.S. were to somehow fall flat on their face and not get out of the group in this tournament, then I would be like, yeah, okay, we've seen enough. Like, thank you very much, but we're going to make a change at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, if your standard, back to what you were saying earlier with regard to Europe, and I think South America applies too, if the standard really is, we want to be one of the very best, like in the top 10 in the world and maybe even higher than that. There's really only two times where you can really prove that, because we can't prove that in CONCACAF. There's no other teams in CONCACAF, North America, that are as good as the U.S.
Right.
So Mexico's kind of on our level, but not really. You know, Canada was a bit of a problem during the qualifying. They beat us and we tied them the other time, but like they've fallen on hard times since. But like, really, the only two places where you can really prove it is at the World Cup and now at the Copa America, particularly if you get to play Brazil or Argentina and maybe Uruguay, because I think Uruguay is on our level too. So this is that put up or shut up moment.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the only one you're going to get before 2026, so you better, whatever camp you're in, batten it down, because the reckoning is coming in June. And it's going to be very fascinating to see how that plays out. But right now, all you people that were rooting for Mexico, just go away.
Yeah, that's
done with you.
Yeah, that's bad. That's bad. All right. Well, talk about ending that on a spicy note. That's going to do it for us on this episode of Living Off the Land 277. Appreciate you guys listening as always. You can follow us on social media.
That's it. On X at Stiff McGee. I can't even talk anymore. That's on X at Stiff McGee or on Instagram at Stefano.Steven.
You can follow me at Daniel J. Ford. You can follow the show at the LOTL Podcast. And that's going to do it for us this week. So for Champ, who fell asleep down by my feet.
Not much of a watchdog
anymore,
he's
not,
are
he's not, he's, his watch has ended.
He needs that sponsorship to keep him going, man.
As they say in Game of Thrones, his watch has ended. So so for Champ, for Steven, I'm Dan. You've been listening to Living Off the Land. Have a great rest of your week and weekend, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Bye.